All right, here we go. Week 12. Obviously, start with the Georgia-Tennessee game, but we can also mention Oregon survives. This is what you're supposed to do throughout a season, right? Like, these are the games you're
going to
– Yes, you're not going to have your fastball every week. That's something that's big. Texas, I would argue, too, didn't play elite, didn't play great. Clemson survives. We'll get into depth about that. So a lot of teams, that's kind of the theme, was surviving, but Georgia – I mean, we talked about
a great football game.
It was a great game, but the start was interesting to me because I was there, Brent. The place was going bananas. Everybody, it was a blackout. Everybody was jacked up. Everybody was excited. You know, needed something to cheer about early, and then Georgia gets down 10-0 like that. Tennessee goes right down the field. Offense goes three and out first. They score, then it messes up. I mean, just it looked out of sync. It looked like we'd been seeing, and then. Bang, something clicked, and it was a 30-7 run to end the football game.
One play. Tennessee jumps off sides. Beck takes a shot. Lovett makes a contested catch. And then all of a sudden, it looked like the weight of the entire world was lifted off of the offense. It's like, oh, we can go make plays. And the confidence that you saw in Beck, because obviously, like, the first play of the game, offensively for Georgia, you take a deep shot and it gets dropped. Like, again, like it's one of those here we go again moments. But that play to me just borderline, because that was third down. And that's Tennessee gets the ball back up 10-0. I mean, they're rolling, everything's going their way. Complete game changer of a play.
Yeah. And it's fun to watch Styles because Styles make fights. And, but I do think, and we've talked about this a lot, Brent, like we've talked about it a ton. Just take deep shots. They don't have to connect, but being able, it was a deep shot to Arian first. It was a deep shot to Bell. And then you started to take deep shots throughout the game where you started to draw pass interference. And that's what happens. When you take shots, defenders get antsy. They get handsy. If you look at Georgia's defense, they do the same exact thing. Yep. But man, what a statement for Carson Beck. Like, what an absolute statement. Like, that dude's been ridiculed, made fun of. So many people smiled or got upset with the smile at the end of the game, which I thought was ridiculous because I know exactly what I would do as a teammate if that was David Green and it was late in the game. I would literally walk over to him and be like, dude, I just crapped my pants. Like, I would have said something to make him laugh. Like, right, to get him out of his hole. And another thing, Brent, sneaky part about this game that needs to be talked about, Georgia ran a design quarterback run. But before that, Beck breaks two tackles in the pocket, stands strong, finishes a run with lowering his shoulder, another rushing touchdown late in the football game. If they would do that now down the stretch, this offense could get really good because you need that extra element. Running backs are banged up. Dude, you saw all kinds of – you saw Nitro on the field, Nitro Tuggle at wide receiver for really the first time extended minutes. Hello, tight ends. What?
Welcome back. Like,
welcome back to 12 personnel tight ends. Hey, did you know that Oscar Delp played for Georgia? Like, I mean, my goodness. Like, he's all of a sudden a big part. And so it all clicked at the right moment when they needed it most.
And a lot of that was, I think, Tennessee's defense and how they play defense. But I will say, I about fell out of the chair. The dog came over and about jumped on me when I saw they ran a power read on third and like two. They've never run that play in the 7 or 8 years that I've watched Georgia, you know, been covering Georgia football. So,
like, and Carson's not an elite athlete, but Carson's a really good athlete. And that
he makes
that
one is, move and then gets north south. That's all you got
to
do.
And listen, when that can be an answer on third and short, and you ran a jet sweep to Bell, and like just a little bit more creativity too, which throughout a game, zero sacks was also a difference. Let's be honest, we talked about it. Nobody's going to be successful when they don't have time like they did last week. Ole Miss ate Georgia up front, and you switch. Green is no longer at left tackle. And I think Fairchild, 57, right, went to left tackle.
53.
No,
Freeland.
Played the whole game. Played really well. They protected Carson. They went play action a lot. A lot on early downs. He was under center a lot, which was different. But it was just a good time to have a good day. And you look at Georgia, and this is why we talked about it this week. I mean, I think there's seven teams that can win this thing, and Georgia's one of them. And
yep.
What gets really interesting to me now is the Tennessee two-loss comparison with Bama, with everybody else, for gosh sakes. Like, it's going to be it's gonna be madness.
The numbers game of it.
Ole Miss, to see how – because Tennessee beat Bama. Bama beat Georgia. Ole Miss beat Georgia. Like, just the merry-go-round that will exist. But I think Georgia punched their ticket tonight to the playoffs. Like, I think that right there with what they've played schedule-wise – would absolutely be enough to get them in the college football playoff if they win, obviously, the rest of their game.
The next two games and the next one, yes, but the Tech game, I think, like, it's not a layup at all. That's not a scrimmage like next week.
Like, next week is not a scrimmage. Stay healthy.
All that, all those sort of things. But I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit here. So right before the game, I think it was on Friday, I put it on our message board, but I also tweeted it out. Four things I thought that were tangible that Georgia could do to sort of kickstart its offense. One was early down play action, and a lot of it, and constantly they did that. Two was pick your five O-linemen that are healthy and you feel good with, and stick with them.
And those Green's not healthy. Green's not healthy. So instead of rotating, yes.
And those five guys played the entire game. Like, there's something
which we haven't done this season yet.
No, they rotate a lot. They try to play guys, so they haven't seen that. And then the other thing was to take the deep shots. You just got to take them. And three out of the four. So I was pleased to see those things. But
and Georgia's defense part of played it, great. Georgia's defense
played well. Nico played really well, honestly.
Nico did play well, but and when you see him in person, like, God, that dude spit. He's first of all, he's big as crap. Like, he's 6'6". I mean, he's an enormous human. And then you watch that ball come out, like, he throws laser beams. And he scrambled after being dinged a week ago, lowered his shoulder on that first drive. Like, he showed you, like, I'm here to compete. I'm here to win. The explosive plays, Georgia kept a lid on it. Like, Georgia did a good job with limiting Samson in the run game. That was a big deal. Like, that guy's been carrying the weight for this offense. And Nico played good. But no explosives, no over the tops, no big plays. Let them win. I mean, 15 play drive, no points. You know, just make them continuously earn it, and they did that. And then you force a turnover here. You make a play at the end of the game, and it's over. So
the tight ends for Tennessee, like Kitzelman, and then the other one, I think, what was it?
Start of the game on fire.
But
first drive,
that to me was something that they used early.
Yeah.
And then when they got sort of into the normalcy of the game, it went away. And that was one thing, because I thought that was a bit of an adjustment from him. But there's other things when you watch that game and you see that Georgia bringing a linebacker and them getting a free rush on Nico on like first and 10 play action plays, there's a certain level of predictability to me to Heupel's offense that they know the instant the quarterback goes down like this, they just bring guys. And they get pressure consistently. And that forced some plays, forced them off balance. Now, Samson, I mean, did have 100 yards, but it wasn't an overwhelming run game for them. And it put them into third and longs certain.
And the crazy thing, Brent, for Tennessee is their offensive line ain't that great. Like, it's really not. Like, I look at their two tackles and they're very average. Like,
they had the lowest run block grade in the conference going into the game.
But that dude picks holes, lowers his shoulders, they tempo you, and their system kind of wears you out with body blows, and you saw that before the half. And I was sitting there with Nicholas watching the game, my son. I'm like, Georgia stopping the run, 1 yard, 2 yard. And then I told him, I said, look at this, watch this in the third quarter. And then it's 5 yards. And then it's 6 yards, because that ground game just kind of wears you out with body blows. And listen, they change things too from – they'll go to gap scheme and they'll start pulling guys and they'll change, the way they run the football, and they're good at it, but that's by far their strength. But let's go somewhere else. Let's go to Pittsburgh.
Well, so one other thing, two other things with Georgia. And then we'll,
you said one, now you went to two. You can't have two.
Two, because I got to talk about the Pollock Family Foundation and your boy Brett Thorson, potentially the play of the game on the punt return where he makes what the tackle. Like shed a block and accelerated and made a tackle. Like Australian dude says, I got this. I can play this game. I'm not just a.
You're right. I'm glad you mentioned that. Cause that was, I was like, how did he just like, no one else could tackle him. And he literally closed space, which punters don't ever do, and got stiff armed and still was able to get through it and make a tackle. You're right. Tip of the cap, sir.
Special teams matter. The other was Kirby's demeanor, the entire, like all the interviews and just watching him on the sideline. He was just here. Now there were certain times he got animated when it's in a play situation, but all the interviews, all the pregame, all that just here. And it's almost like he's like, okay, we are what we are. We're going to go do what we do, and the chips fall where they may. And I'm going to be here for my team and believe in my team the rest of the way. And I thought his energy, you could tell, sort of was a calming thing within their game.
And last thing, and I promise we'll get to Clemson-Pittsburgh. I also think Georgia mixed in tempo exceptionally well. Like, even late in the game, you could tell they didn't want to go slow. Like, with 7 minutes, 8 minutes left, they got the ball – you know, a little bit backed up, and they still went tempo when a lot of things are telling you to slow down when you get in, especially when they started to get in that 4 minute offensive situation and stayed aggressive, passing the ball to the tight end in the flat. Like, that's still another thing where you could have just ran it and took the field goal. So kudos to them. I thought Clemson looked dead. What are you pointing at, Brent?
Look how dirty Nico's jersey was compared to Beck's. That's a very valid point.
It is. They protected zero sacks for Beck, and he ran the football exceptionally well. Frazier did good, but
great get right game for them.
Great get right game. All right, Clemson, Pittsburgh. Clemson came out great, looked great. Pittsburgh, what's what they've done a lot of times? They did it to your West Virginia Mountaineers, got down, and then they've come back in almost every game when they've needed to and scored. But I thought Klubnik again. He had some moments where he played really, really good. It was more dink and dunk. It wasn't big explosive plays and play after play. It was more like that for Pittsburgh. But I thought when the game mattered most, Klubnik took over and made some plays, which was, if you're a Clemson fan, like, you got to welcome. He's got something about him, man. He's got something that I really like and want to follow. And I kind of feel his energy and stuff when he's toting rock, and he runs it like a running back and makes the big play late in the game.
Great effort from Pittsburgh. I mean, playing with the backup QB. Yeah. By the way, who made plays? Like, it wasn't like it was a struggle bus like we've seen with some other backup QBs in various games. They made plays and obviously took the lead, and then the late play by Klubnik. Another sort of late play, great game, great finish was South Carolina taking care of business. First off, you get Missouri on third down. The back goes the wrong way. This sets up fourth down. And then Cook throws an absolute dime that Burden kind of one hands to put them ahead. And then it's Sellers right back down the field throwing the football, by the way. He was phenomenal throwing the football in that game. And South Carolina just keeps rolling, keeps making themselves interesting.
And we haven't seen that from Missouri in a while. Like, they looked really good offensively, and I know they've had the quarterback situation with Pine and Cook going back and forth, but Cook looked more healthy. He's definitely not 100% who he was, but Missouri putting up points, Missouri coming up with late plays late. I thought South Carolina came out, I thought they were going to curb stomp them first. I thought they were going to beat them down. And then Missouri steadied the ship. But I like this Sellers kid, man. Like, he's just big and strong, and he does. He's a big kid that can run, but I think he looks to pass. And they trusted him on fourth and short to throw the football, and he's not one of those guys that just freaks out. Like, he kind of drops back. He surveyed the field, and then he takes off and will make plays, and then Sanders gives him another element of physicality and toughness. And you got to tackle those dudes for four quarters. Like, and they're they are not easy to do, and they're going to be aggressive and go for it on fourth down and put pressure on you. And then defensively, they're putting pressure on you. So, you know, South Carolina Clemson down the road is looking to be a great, great game that could have something on the line. Like,
yes,
who knows what's going to be on the line for Clemson, or maybe even South Carolina. LSU goes down to Florida, so they gone. I mean, they are out of the mix with the SEC race now. And, man, you talk about disappointment. Like, LSU, like, they've fallen off a cliff. Goodness gracious. We were talking about them being so good several weeks ago, and
Now they lost. I mean, you think about it. So, by the way, first, Sellers, 21 of 30, 353 and 5 touchdowns. Like, phenomenal effort from him.
Well, Missouri's got a good defense. They're a good defense. They're not elite, but they're a good defense. And he played great.
You said, you mentioned LSU and Florida. LSU now, now this is their fourth loss, but I was looking at it. They have three losses in 12 of the last 13 years. At least three losses. Like, this is one where,
and the other one.
All right, exactly. 15-0. And Edo got him a very big bag for that season. But Joey, is that Burrow, one where the Justin fan base, Jefferson, you think, is a little frustrated with
Brian Kelly gets in the SEC championship game his first year, you know, and you think, holy cow, this is going to be good. And listen, the reason Brian Kelly came to LSU was because he was going to have better players. Like, he was tired of being in the playoffs and having less caliber players, and he's had them. He had the number two pick in the draft last year. And, man, and guys that are balling at the wide receiver spot too, with Brian Thomas Jr. is playing great in Jacksonville. The kid Malik Nabers is balling for the Giants. So, I mean,
yes,
a lot of talent wasted. They fixed the defense a little bit more this year, and the offense isn't as good. And Nussmeier looked elite really early on in the season, and he's slowly started to fall off. This offense has fallen off, but definitely got to be frustration. But, man, we've been bragging on Florida for weeks, Brent. We've been talking about them and how they haven't quit. They continue to battle. They continue to play hard. I don't have a clue. Okay, so Coach Willis, Eric Willis, the coach I coach with at North Oconee with basketball, he was like,
big win today, by the way. Good job.
Big win. He goes, I think Lagway is going to play. I said, bro, I've had a hamstring that was slightly pulled, and you don't come back in a couple weeks. That just, you don't do that. You can't come back and sprint and push off. And when he went down, he had no weight on it. He was on crutches. Like, so you think that thing's shredded. He comes out today and plays in a leg sleeve. And this is a guy that do that. But what did he do? He won from the pocket and made plays. Like, Florida, if you're not happy with the way your kids are competing, and if you're not happy with the way Lagway looks as a young pup, man, you're missing out, because I think there's some good things to point to this year. It's not all bad.
Yeah. The unfortunate part for them is the schedule's the same next year, but still yet. So you mentioned at the beginning survival. Oregon survived.
Yep.
And when I'm talking about survived, it was I wanted to find the exact how long it was in the game, how much was left in the game. But there was a 4th and 9, and Gabriel just makes an absolute, you know, play with his legs, hits one, I think it was to Ferguson, the tight end, sets up things for them to get back in the game. And it was just a slog of a game. It was a weird, like, they had one turnover early, and Wisconsin couldn't do anything in a throwing game. I had that sort of kind of multiple TV action there, right? One right beside me watching both. And they just survived. And and then Lanning actually faked a field goal at the very end, which, by the way, I thought was actually, I didn't see anything wrong with the decision trying to get it, because you don't want to go up 6 when the touchdown can beat you. So he tried to end it, didn't. And then Uyunglele gets the interception to seal it for them. And they are undefeated and obviously looking to stay number one, and will be number one as we move forward until you've got Washington next week.
Interestingly enough, it would have, like, if Oregon lost, nothing really changes. I mean, they're still in the driver's seat. The Big Ten still looking like they're going to get 4 teams in. You know, SMU survives, another survives, like, plays pretty good, survives. I mean, you didn't think they were going to lose the football game, but these games are always going to happen. And especially when you play consecutive games, especially when you're playing in new environments, Wisconsin and new teams, and you're getting all the pats on the back. Cause remember, these are 18, 19, 20 year old kids that, I mean, they change their mind all the time. So, like, oh, it's frustrating sometimes. As a coach, it can be frustrating.
SMU, I was watching the game, and I thought they were Duke. They had, like, I guess it was for Dallas. It was a, you're talking about, 'cause on the colors, helmet, and the blue and the black the way they were. It just, I was like, I'm not watching Duke, am I? I had the right game won. No, it was the right game. Jennings made enough plays. The Boston College QB kid made some plays for them and
yeah, he did.
Kept them in the game. But
and yeah, remember, Castanello's he put himself in the transfer portal this week.
He got benched.
The guy you saw early in the year versus Florida State. So just now all of a sudden you got change and love when you see kids react to that. That's definitely an awesome thing. Hey, how about Colorado?
I just scrolled up on my notes, and that was the next spot to go to. Coach Prime coming. They control their destiny, their own destiny. They went out. They're going to be in the college football playoff as maybe even the three seed. That likely not the three, but probably the four seed.
Yeah, I mean 8-2. Shedeur Sanders continues to do it. Listen, they're not going to try to run the football very much. That's just not who they are, nor do they really care. But you know they do a great job.
Did more of it today, and got some big plays today. They did more of it today and got some big plays today in the running game.
Yeah, they had 65 yards. They really did a good job. That's really good.
A few here or there, like it's something. Yeah, defense though, special teams, like
sure.
More of a complete
for Colorado. Sure, that actually is a decent running game. But Utah, like this team was picked so high, like so good. You thought they would come in and have a great year. Big 12 favorites. Them and Oklahoma State went back and forth between who the favorites were, and they're on their third quarterback, and it was ugly. Like it was just. It was not pretty. If you look, so now Isaac Wilson got to play. He's still not good. They turned the football over. They had three INTs. They had a fumble. They could not run the football. Their offense is awful. It's been awful all year long. Like it's just their defense is not a bad team. Like they can keep them in games. Morgan Scalley's got an unbelievable scheme. They play
pressure
aggressive.
A good bit.
They pressure you. Then they pressure you a ton. They're good at it, but. Offensively, there ain't nothing they can do right. I mean, they just – it's just – it's a struggle to watch Utah. I feel bad for them. It's just – I've played on teams like that. When you're on defense and they do that, it is so bad, man. Like, it's so frustrating. You get in your own head, and you're thinking, how do I get them a short field so they can possibly score? And then in the BYU game, you give up a special teams kickoff return, which is even worse. You know, like, it's just – It's frustrating when you're a one-sided team and you do start to get a little bit of division. But Shedeur Sanders and now I think Dylan Gabriel looks human. So the Heisman conversation now becomes really, really legit. Boise State
open
wins.
With a capital O. I think very much. No, so speaking of the Big 12 and a team that we highlighted earlier this week in the preview, I think it was this week, but your Arizona State Sun Devils –
dude,
went into Manhattan and made plays early, got some turnovers. Levitt played phenomenal, great throws, big plays for them, and they hung on, took care of business. Hung on, I think, is probably the right word. They are now kind of in that. They got BYU next week, which BYU is now tied at the half with Kansas.
Yeah, and they got up 21-0 at the half, and Arizona State was like, let me get out of here with the win. I mean, that was
– yes.
Because they are not a great offensive team. But, dude, we've talked about them a bunch. They're finding ways. They play great defense. They're going to stay committed to running the football. They stopped the run exceptionally well. They jumped all over Kansas. Kansas State, by the way, that's been one of the more – the Big 12 is just drunk. Like, the Big 12 is crazy, man. Like, everybody you thought was going to be really good in the Big 12 is not very good. Kansas State – has struggled, and listen, they're fine, but that's three losses now. Like, they're not elite by any stretch. But you got Arizona State, Colorado, BYU, and those are your three top teams. Like, that's not what anybody had expected before the season started. So it's a fun league. It always has been. It always drives me nuts when people look at the Big 12 and they don't have a national championship contender. No, forget that. Like it does, they play good football every week, and now with the playoff and somebody guaranteed to get in the past, you wouldn't be talking about them as much. Now we get to, and they get to prove it on the field. And it's Travis Hunter will be in that Heisman debate too, because he made a pick today and obviously making plays. So that's another thing to look out for too.
With Arizona State too, like they're we always talk about injuries. Their loss, Levitt didn't play, or one of their losses against Cincinnati. Sims played. So that was one. All right, so go to some of the other earlier games. Northwestern, I thought, oh, perfect game plan. The half's going to be over in like 20 minutes, if that. And then the punter dropped the ball and punted it, and it got blocked out of bounds. And then Ohio State took care of business as they should have. The Texas game, though, I watched a good bit of the Texas game because I thought that was one that Arkansas was – they were hanging around. I thought they were going to – had a chance to take the lead. They just didn't. And Texas's defense, I think, made the plays that sort of secured that game for them and shows up week in and week out for them. Is that something where you look – you watch that and you see Texas and you're like surviving on the road, or is it like Texas is kind of just okay? Maybe not third best team in the country.
I think both. Can I think both? And I say that because I think their defense, even in the Georgia game, like if there's any other game where your quarterback's turning the football over and you're turning it over and you're setting the team up and you're getting run out of the building against a really good team, but their defense kept them in it time and time again, and they do every week. And this is not an explosive offense. Like this is not an offense that they don't have Worthy anymore. They don't have the playmakers out wide. Like they don't have the speed that Sark can play with and manipulate. They don't have the running game, but you know, Ears has been playing very effective. He's been not turning the football over, and they're not sexy, but you're right. They're going to play good defense. They're going to do a great job, especially in their secondary. They're not going to give up explosive plays, and they're one of those teams that can win it. Like they can put a few games together. They can play a few different styles and they can win this whole thing.
I will say watching the game though, and the plays that Green made for Arkansas or that he could have made, Texas A&M is going to be very interesting for them. Cause a lot of the same things, a lot of the QB run game and Texas A&M's defense versus what Arkansas's defense is. I think that's a step up. I would almost lean A&M, especially being at home in that game.
Can I say this
right now?
Can I say this?
Go for it.
When I watch Talen Green, I say if that guy goes in the portal, I think he's going to make a lot of money. I think he could make a lot of money.
If he doesn't go pro.
If he doesn't go pro. Because I've seen him throw deep balls after deep balls that are really good. I've seen him run around. The dude's 6'5", 6'6".
Yes.
He's running 4'5", 4'4". You think about him behind an offensive line that could really tote it with some weapons, that dude could be a weapon of mass destruction. Like, that dude could light people on fire. And I'm sorry, Woo Pig, I love you, and I love Arkansas, and I think they've competed well this year. And I hate to say that, but that's – kind of the world we live in. You look at that guy, man, he's got some special written all over him, and he's had it, and he's done it in multiple games, and he's been banged up like crazy this year, and you see the toughness, you know, continue to show itself. But he's got, I feel like he's got some of that, Brent, where I say that that's a guy that people might look at and say he could be our dude with his athletic ability and his throwing ability. And I know he transferred from Boise, you know, to Arkansas
already.
But so that dude just he's got some good written on him.
All right, so did you see the end of Louisville and Stanford?
I did not, but I'm not sure how Louisville lost. I mean, I know why, because it's the same thing they've been having all year long. Their defense is atrocious. I mean, Louisville's defense all year long, they can score on anybody. Like, it's just a matter of if their defense, their pass defense has been atrocious all season long, but their game plan.
Can I read you the very end?
Okay.
Stanford has the ball in its own 44 with 5 seconds left.
Oh, sweet baby.
Screen Jesus. Pass, and there's an unsportsmanlike penalty with 1 second left. Then Stanford lines up to kick a 57-yarder, and Louisville jumps off sides. Stanford makes the 52-yarder to win the game.
Oh, my God!
Like, it was it was
– It was not good.
Was
the flag a good flag, or did these refs do something stupid?
It was,
again?
I mean, I saw it, but it was questionable at best. Maybe I don't know. I didn't think it was the greatest call. I mean, I think it was right there, and it had to be. I don't know. I hate that it was the call, but yeah,
that was how they lost. I hate those late in the game, but those, and especially when you're a coach, man, I'm just telling you, like, the self-inflicted wounds are the ones that hurt the most. Like, when you get a personal foul and then you jump off sides, like, those are the things that it's hard to put your head on the pillow because you cost yourself the chance to win. Like, and that sucks. That really sucks. It's just been a weird season for Louisville because every game they've been in, when you look at the Cardinals, they deserve a ton of respect, man. They beat Clemson up. Like, that was a pretty convincing game. But their losses, remember, they beat Georgia Tech when they were rolling early in the season. They lost to Notre Dame by 7. And Notre Dame, I think Notre Dame can win it all. Like, I'm ready to put Notre Dame on that list. Like, I've seen enough of Notre Dame that I think defensively, pass rush, QB, run game, got enough where I think they could get hot. They're good enough to where they could win a bunch of games in a row.
And I think they'll likely be at home, by the way, for that first game, too.
Yeah, because of seating purposes, I could see maybe.
It's gonna be like, I could see them as the 8, ended up because like a 7 or 8 seed.
Yeah, I could see that too. But they lost to Notre Dame by 7. They lost to SMU by 7. They lost to Miami by 7. And in all those games, they're scoring 30 points. You know, like they're putting up a bunch of points, but their defense, you know, their defense hasn't played great aside from the Clemson game where they played good and forced a few mistakes. But I definitely think Louisville's a good football team, but that's a heck of a way to lose. What else you got?
And they are now officially out, by the way, of our available or teams that can potentially make the playoff.
Yep.
So that list shrunk by a couple. One team that's LSU's still very much out. On it.
LSU's yep. out. Louisville's out. So you're losing a couple.
There's still a bunch of Big 12 teams alive. But Boise, Bear called it, by the way. He said, hey, if you look up and San Jose State's, you know, up on them. Bear also called that Oregon would struggle with Wisconsin, so the guy kind of knows what he's talking about. But Boise did. The score was very – I mean, it was a 7-point game late into the fourth quarter. That score kind of got out of hand late. But, you know, Boise's quarterback – or San Jose's quarterback put up almost 500 yards throwing on Boise. But they won. But Tulane is the one that I want to talk about because Tulane is now
– smash.
Taking care of business week in and week out. Their only two losses are to, you know, Power Four teams. If Boise falters
matter.
In some way, like if Boise falters in some way, and Army is obviously still there. So I think the G5 spot or non-Power 4 spot is Boise, Army, Tulane. I think that kind of leaves that there. One sort of random question that I thought was interesting today, just because you see a lot of these games on this week, like Bama playing Mercer, A&M playing New Mexico State, like some of those other type of games. Do you think those games are ones that still should get played with all the changes that we have, the FCS opponent, things like that?
This is so hard because I understand that these programs need this. They need the money to fund their programs. So, yes, I want those teams to have those opportunities. Do I want to see those games? No. Nobody wants to see those games. Like, so, essentially, you're adding another bye week, and it kind of depends – where you at it, but like if you're Georgia, by the way, and this has nothing to do that I went to school with Georgia. Georgia's had a murderer's row schedule. Like it's just been miserable. Like, so you get a kind of a break, you get kind of a lapse, which is a good thing. So it's probably a good thing for Bama after a big game against LSU to have that built in. Cause Bama's had a really, really tough schedule. So, I mean, I don't want to see it. No. Would I like to see some form? I would love to. I've always wanted to do this, Brent. I think every league should have another crossover opponent from another league. Because when we start comparing league to league, if everybody has one kind of crossover, we're gonna get a data point every week. There's gonna be something that kind of sticks out.
Like the SEC was 10-2, or the Big Ten was 11, I mean, or 6-5, or you know, ACC was 9-3, that kind of thing.
Yeah, does that make sense? Like just throw me a crossover. Everywhere, everybody has to play one crossover. And so we kind of figure out a little bit more about, you know, who is who, and you don't get those games that are not as good. But it's just, it's the way it works. But the playoff gap is shrinking. You know, we talk about anybody can lose to anybody. We're running out of games now. And so I think we're, you know, Tuesday we're going to start to see some more concrete things. But I mean, the only thing really up in the air right now to me is going to be the SEC and how they weigh all those teams because
yeah. Cause they all beat each other.
Yeah. Which is
one beat one, one beat the other. You know, like right now with Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Alabama beat Georgia, Georgia beat Tennessee, Tennessee beat Alabama.
Yeah. And then you can add,
I think
there,
what you're going to see in the rankings wise, by the way, you're going to see almost like a group where Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia move up by one and Tennessee maybe slides behind Georgia. And you, that's kind of the order based upon what they've got currently, at least.
And so. You still got Texas and Texas A&M with one loss, one loss league record
in the conference,
but they play each other. So one of those teams guaranteed to go right in. And then whoever the loser is, my goodness, you're going to be in there with UGA, with Tennessee, with
Texas
Alabama.
Is the one to me that has to win that game more than like if Texas loses that game against A&M that and they're 10-2 without playing in the SEC championship game, I think they're the odd man out. They played no one else other than Georgia.
Well, and the interesting thing to me about it is once you start comparing those teams, which is cool because this is what we do, right? Ole Miss beat Georgia. Alabama beat Georgia. Georgia beat Tennessee. Tennessee beat Alabama. So every
Georgia
one of those
Texas.
Teams beat one of those top teams. Yeah, Georgia beat Texas and Tennessee. So, like, they all have a win against each other. The only one who doesn't have a big win is Texas. So your Reuters guide of the week for Texas fans, like, you're going to need somebody else to lose probably. You're going to be cheering against Georgia and Georgia Tech. And
or take care of your own business.
Or take care of your own business with A&M, which is more than possible to end the season. But I think that's
so one thing. I very rarely listen to game day. I'm usually running a lot of errands on Saturday mornings to get other things done.
Going to the grocery store.
Things like that. Oil change this morning, all that. I heard Coach Saban say about the playoff. We're going to be griping about who gets in and who's 12 versus 13 or 11 versus 12 or 14 or something like that. He said, but it's going to be great because the five or six teams that can really win it and they're the five or six best teams are going to be in. And I think he's actually right. I don't think you're going to see a team that can't win the whole thing not be in it.
Yeah. I got seven teams that can win it and – I don't think all seven are going to be in, but I think it'll be at least six. So, yeah, I think it'll be right on the edge. But here's the thing. Are we really going to gripe that much? Because there is nobody that's head and shoulders really above it. Like, Oregon is clearly number one, but that might change in a couple of weeks when they play in the Big Ten championship game. So, but I think the only thing that's – I think the only thing that's going to be guaranteed is – if the ACC keeps going down this path, they're going to get
one.
Yeah. The Big 12 goes down this path, they're getting one. Now, if BYU loses today, that solidifies that to me. That's a guarantee they're getting one. And then obviously you've got right now Boise, Tulane on the outside, one. They're getting one, obviously. There's a lot of teams that are going to be left with four from the Big Ten. So – you know, do the math, Brent. You're the math guy. Like, that's a lot of at-large teams. Notre Dame is, to me, they keep taking care of business. They're in. So the spots are filling up, and then once we start measuring, we'll get more and more fun. But we got a couple more weeks of this, and we got the ranking show we'll talk about on Tuesday. And
I got to ask you one more thing, though.
Yeah.
Two more things, actually. One more question, one more comment. One, did you see the kick the kid made on game day?
Yes.
Today. Because that was phenomenal. And the story was even better because they waited in line forever. The girl had the ticket and she's like, there's no way I can make the ticket. She got selected. And the guy's like, I got you. He was right beside her. So maybe we got a future love story there with that. But that was fun to see. Like that dude looked like he could be a D1 kicker tomorrow.
Well, I mean, is that kosher? Like, because I would bring a recruit with me every time. Like, I'd make sure I'd buddied up then. Like, hey, if I win, we're splitting this. I'm kicking. Like, I would do that with everybody. From now on across the
That's your
the
competitive
country,
intelligence, by the way.
100%. Like, that's the first thing I thought. If I'm around the country and I'm watching, y'all get with it, guys. Get with it and work on it. Because if you can do that and you can get together, you can piece somebody in there, get somebody who's a soccer player who can kick and be like, all right, no matter what, I'm kicking and we'll take care of the money and split it up.
I mean, that seems like the smart and competitively intelligent thing to do. The other thing I wanted to point out was that moving to 2-0 today was the North Oconee Titans lady basketball team, who was led by Miss Leah Pollock with 17 points and 9 rebounds today. Coach was probably proud.
Yeah, I guess Coach Willis was proud. I wasn't. No, I'm just kidding. No, it was good. Leah's second varsity game. She got to get some action, get some playing time. So Titans, more importantly, get the dub and are 2-0. That's all that really matters. But I appreciate you giving Leah a shout out. And we will be back, Brent, what, Tuesday? Get some rankings in, possibly. Should have some more to talk about. I mean, maybe not.
Boise or BYU and Kansas still tied. That's kind of the one game that might throw a wrinkle into things. I think outside of that, you might see just one little flip with Georgia and Tennessee. Everybody else kind of bumps up one. But yeah, if BYU goes down, that makes it interesting.
I think Georgia might go above Miami as well. I think they could go above Miami with that win too. So I think they're in a good spot now. But appreciate y'all listening. We will continue to come back next week. You'll see us a couple times. Might get a guest. Might get a coach. Might do something. Hit like. Hit subscribe. Thank y'all very much. Brent, see you, brother.
Later.